Hi, it's Paul Camilos. Welcome to Series 6 of Shooting the Breeze. Join me and my co-host Jacinta Govind alongside the STB crew as we cover women's hoops and women in hoops. We'll share conversations and get a little deeper with inspiring players, amazing coaches, and the legends from behind the scenes. Especially in this series, we'll be talking to dream chasers that give it their all and lead with their heart.
Yeah, I mean, it was really cool to have both of them. And I hadn't met either of them before, but it's just because we're Aussies, it was just so easy to connect and feel at home. And honestly, a training camp, all the preseason games, every experience that I had there was nothing short of incredible. Like, all the girls were amazing. Beck was awesome. It was really cool to be able to connect with her. But it was just a really cool experience that I feel like I've learned so much from, and just grateful to have had that opportunity.
In her first Aussie pod, Country Victoria player Jazz Shelley has circled back to regional Victoria as the first pick for inaugural WNBL team Geelong United. She's cut her teeth in the United States college system for the last 5 years, mainly with Nebraska women's basketball, as part of an exceptional era of players that have quite literally transformed women's hoops. And we're thrilled to have her back in Australia. Currently playing with the NBL 1 South's Ballarat Miners alongside coach Kennedy Kiriyama, she'll have her first taste of the South Conference Finals in the coming weeks. We also get into her impressive college years, which shaped her on and off the court with a business-savvy mind. Make no mistake, her heart is set on her hometown roots and the desire to give back. We're grateful to get to know Jazz a little more in this episode. She made quite the splash 8 years ago on the world stage as part of that historic Sapphire squad with coach Shannon Seabomb that won the under-17s women's gold in 2016 with that pivotal semi-finals game against the United States. Enjoy. Welcome to Shooting the Breeze. Joining me and my co-host Jacinta Govind, today we've got Jazz Shelley joining us. Jazz, great to have you here. Have you been?
I've been good. Thanks for having me. Excited to talk to you guys today.
Cool. I suppose the first thing is, for any fans who don't know a bit about your background, just give us a little bit of a rundown how you got into basketball. And as we were discussing just before we started recording, some of the other sports that you tried before you kind of decided basketball was it for you.
Yeah. So both of my parents played basketball. It was SEABL at the time. They're both from Gippsland. So I kind of grew up watching my parents play, and then my older brother played, and then my older sister played. And so I tried all the sports. I was definitely built into a basketball family. I tried them all. Like we've talked about, I found out I was randomly good at high jump, went to state for high jump, and did all the little ass, played soccer, bit of footy at school, netball. And yeah, so I think that my parents obviously gave me the choice of what I wanted to do. I experienced everything, but basketball was just kind of in my blood. So that's the route I took.
It's kind of interesting that you got an opportunity to try all these different sports. Were there any that were kind of like a close second for you in relation to basketball?
Yeah, I took netball and basketball pretty seriously up until I was about 14. And then I think it was just before I got an offer from the AIS. I was about 15, I think, and I had to choose between netball or basketball. And also, netball wasn't the greatest for the knees and being on the outdoor courts. So my dad pretty much said, like, if you want to keep playing netball, that's fine, but you kind of have to choose if you're going to take basketball seriously.
And I'm kind of curious about how you found the whole experience of, you know, transitioning from all those different sports to focusing on one, because, you know, you get used to being able to do lots of different things, and then you kind of at that point where you got to just do one. At any point, did you miss any of the other sports?
I wouldn't say I necessarily missed it. I was always a busy kid, so once I took out a bunch of those sports from my lifestyle, I pretty much just inclined basketball and pretty much played basketball almost every day. And my family were really good about avoiding me getting burnt out early. So I always found a way to have fun outside of sports and do things with my friends and stuff to still keep the love for the game. And I'd say I definitely miss netball because I would like to see how far I could have taken that as well. But other than that, no, I'm still loving the game of basketball. So it's been easy to stick with it.
Let's talk a little bit about NBL One at the moment. I mean, you guys are doing well. How are you enjoying, you know, settling in at the Ballarat Miners and getting into the overall NBL One competition?
Yeah, I love it here in Ballarat. All the girls are awesome. It's been nice to kind of get my feet underneath me with Australian basketball again. It's been almost 5 years since I played here, so it's a little bit different. So it's been nice to be able to have this adjustment period and do it with a team that's so welcoming and a team that's doing well. So it's been a really good experience being back in Australia for just now, like 3 weeks. So it's been awesome. And Coach Kennedy has been awesome for me, and we have a really good relationship. So
it sounds like you had a pretty good relationship before now.
So he was the assistant coach when I was with the Melbourne Boomers. So that was kind of our relationship was built there. But also when I played for Southern Peninsula in the Big V, he was the coach of Sunbury. So I was super young, like 15 years old. So he's always coached against me. And then just when I come back from college, he's been around. I do a couple of workouts here and there with him. So, and cross bars a couple of times.
Given that you had just finished college and unfortunately you weren't named in the Phoenix Mercury's final roster for the upcoming WNBA season, did you have a lot of early interest and offers for the upcoming NBL One season?
Yes and no. People kind of got onto it early because I knew that I was going to come back eventually. Yeah, I just wasn't really sure if I wanted to play or not. And with the WNBA being up in the air, it was kind of a weird contract. So it was kind of like, if I didn't make the WNBA, can we sign you? And if I did make the WNBA, they weren't getting me. So it was really hard for a team to go on a limb to say, she doesn't make the team, then we get her. So it was a weird system, but I kind of just having a relationship with Kennedy, who obviously said, I hope I don't see you, but just in case, we'd love to have you. So yes and no, it's hard to sign a player like me when the predicaments are looking like that.
I'm also really curious how you're finding the level of play between college and NBL One at the moment. I mean, there's no question it's different, but how are you finding that?
Yeah, I would say the biggest difference is probably the pace of play just because of the 24-second shot clock. The game is a lot quicker, and we're also used to media timeouts, bunch more timeouts. So the game is a lot quicker, and you don't really get much of a rest. So I think just getting back to the fitness level of Australian basketball has been a little bit of an adjustment. And then I would say it's definitely more physical. I think that in college, as soon as you put two hands on, it's a foul. So being able to play through more physicality here, that's why it's perfect, I think, to play NBL One before I go and play WNBL, just because I think I need to get those reps underneath me before we start the WNBL season.
It was interesting that you mentioned the change of pace between playing women's college basketball and NBL One. Is that attributed to just the different styles of play between America and Australia? Or, yeah, I guess especially because college basketball has a longer shot clock, so maybe there's more of a focus on executing in the half court on offense.
Yeah, so I've kind of noticed since being back that defensive transition is a lot different. I feel like in college we kind of have set rules and responsibilities, not necessarily guarding a certain player. That was just our team. It might be different for others, but we had honed in on not letting anyone get transition offense in college. And because teams like Iowa, teams like Ohio State runs like a super quick in transition and score majority of their points there, we kind of have set defense to avoid transition buckets. And I felt like the same thing when I was playing for Nebraska. That was a really strong suit for us. So people tried to slow that down, which made us play in the half court more.
And defensive assignments, you were tasked with guarding Caitlin Clark for a couple of games.
It's definitely the hardest assignment I've had playing basketball, but tried to make do.
Well, it's pretty exciting when in your roster of 12, you're assigned to guard arguably one of the most recognizable, if not the most recognizable college athlete of the last couple of years. What was your mindset going into that?
Yeah, I think my defense, I might not be like the quickest or most agile, whatever, but I think that I'm really good at scout and like understanding, pretty good feel for the game, where I kind of watched enough film and stuff and watched her game enough to know her tendencies a little bit. She still had, I don't know, probably 40. I don't know exact numbers on us, but just trying to limit certain things, you know, like it's to win a game, you can let her have 40, but then you have to shut down not let anyone else have over 10. You know, like there was just certain things that our team was really good at because we've played Iowa for since forever to try to slow them down because they are so successful. And one of those was in transition. So I think that it was a team effort. One person can't guard her. It's all five players have to be honed in on her. So it's still so impressive what she's able to do with having that much attention on her every night.
So you talked about college, and I want to talk a little bit about college because you were at Oregon and then you went to Nebraska. First of all, how was that change? I mean, because they're different places and they're like really different. How did you find that?
Super different. Yeah. I enjoyed both experiences. They're both very, very different, but I felt my fit was more at Nebraska. I really like the Midwestern culture. I really like the people. Everyone's just so lovely there. I would say Oregon is more, it's like a powerhouse. It's more of like a business and it's kind of more of just basketball. And I kind of found myself wanting to be more of just a basketball player. And I felt like there was more opportunities at Nebraska for me to be able to learn who I was outside of the game and enjoy the game while still having really good connections with teammates, people outside of basketball.
And was that transfer process complicated? Because, you know, I'm quite sure that there are people who are going to tune in and listen and don't understand it. It's not just as simple as, yeah, listen, I just want to go over there.
Yeah. I was very fortunate that mine was a little more simple just because when I was in high school, I was deciding between going to Oregon, Oregon State, Nebraska. And once I told Nebraska I wasn't going there, we still had a pretty strong relationship just because Izzy Bourne was there and she's my best friend. And So that was knowing that Izzy Bourne loved Nebraska and was enjoying it. And I was like, well, I already know I will too. So it was kind of easy to, once I said that I wanted to leave Oregon, having the coaches reach out to me straight away as soon as I hit the portal, which I already had in mind that was somewhere that I really wanted to go. But it's kind of just a process of if you feel like it's not the right fit for you, just going to speak to your coach. They'll help you with the transition to get your name into the transfer portal, and then you can talk to whoever after that and make the decision from there.
In your case, it sounded like it was pretty straightforward. How did your coach at Oregon react when you first said, yeah, listen, I don't think this is a great fit for me?
It was also a unique situation where we had probably, I think, four or five other girls transfer and the whole coaching staff leave. So it was a little bit expected, I think. Yeah. So the head coach and one of the assistants stayed and the rest moved on to a new club. So I think that it was expected that it was going to be a bunch of people come in and say that they wanted to be put in the transfer portal. He was very understanding. We had a relatively good relationship where he wanted the best for me. And if I needed assistance talking to other teams or getting somewhere else, he would help with that. So it was an easy process.
I'm really surprised that there was such a huge change at one time. I mean, I don't think that that's something that happens. I've never heard of it happening. It's kind of like that much at one time from a college before. What was it like being in a team where you kind of, there was so much upheaval happening?
It was difficult just because I loved the game of basketball and I felt myself not loving it as much. And then obviously getting down on confidence when you weren't playing and someone and being a part of a team where there was much chemistry as well. So it was very difficult to play through environments like that. But it's also you learn a lot from it. And I think that a lot of people come over to the US and don't enjoy their experiences. And that's why I'll never crap on the transfer portal, because I've had the best 3 years of my life at Nebraska because of that situation and being able to transfer and play straight away and be on a team where I felt like it fit me more. And like Oregon does suit some people. It's just it wasn't for me. And I think that that's the whole thing about Australians coming over to the US is not every situation suits you. And you just got to find the one that fits you the best.
And one other thing that I want to ask about at Oregon, you played with Sabrina Ionescu. When you were there, I mean, obviously she was a great player, but did you think that she sort of hit the heights that she's managed to hit?
My first year at Oregon was unmatched. Like, I played with some of the best players in the world, like Sabrina, Ruthie, Satu, Aaron Bolley. We had an incredible lineup of people, and that was an unreal experience for me just to learn from those sorts of people. But I always knew Sabrina would be special. She someone that worked harder than anyone else. She was an incredible team captain. She was an incredible leader. And the way she played the game, I was just in love with. Like, she just made everyone around her better. I think once you get to the WNBA, obviously, it's an adjustment period for everybody. But
yeah,
it only took her a couple of seasons, and now you see how incredible she is. She's absolutely smashing again, making another Olympics. But yeah, I'm not surprised at all. Just being able to practice with and against her, she's definitely special.
Must be kind of weird to be like, hey, one of my previous college teammates now has their own shoe with Nike. Yeah. Like,
and I wear them too. Yeah, no, it's
that's
pretty
wild.
Cool. Yeah. And that's the cool part about coming over to college. I got to meet and be around some of the best players in the world and learn so much and take that knowledge with me. So I think it's pretty cool. I got those experiences.
And just a side note with Nebraska, you're the Nebraska Huskers.
Corn Huskers, yeah.
Corn Huskers. What's a Corn Husker?
It's a great question. So Nebraska is very flat, very known for cornfields, sell a lot of corn, grain, whatever. And so a Corn Husker is literally someone that husks corn. Yeah. So, that's where that name came from.
It's very uniquely representative of Nebraska because something about it's taken me honestly a couple of years to, I don't know, get in the right, not mindset, but the right way of thinking of college basketball. Like, it took me a while to understand the conferences and that the conferences didn't necessarily align with your geographical location.
Yeah.
And how it all, like, the whole structure took me a while. I'm still definitely not an expert. Yes. And then it goes one step further when I'm kind of like, well, what are these mascots like? I mean, an Oregon Duck is pretty straightforward, yeah, but I don't know what a Husker is.
Yeah, a lot of them are very unique mascots.
You know, it's kind of interesting when you think about all the things that you've managed to experience over in the US college landscape. If you were going to give anybody who's considering going to college that one piece of advice that you think is like the thing that you wish you were told before you went, what would it be?
I would just say that, like, any sort of change is good, even if it doesn't work out for you and it's not the right fit. You learn so much from that experience, and then you then become grateful for things that you might not have gotten or don't get now. Or I think that you can always come over here and try it, and if you don't like it, that's okay. But I think just knowing that you have tried it and given it a shot and experienced something different or challenged yourself, just knowing that, I think it's a good thing. Obviously, half my team, like, going through Australia stuff, half would go to college and half would go to the WNBL. Like, obviously, I think about what would happen if I went straight to the WNBL as well. But for me, like, I'm here now. So I think it's pretty cool to say that I've had both experiences and I'm being able to bring the knowledge I have from that experience as well.
You've also experienced the WNBA. So what was that leap from college to the WNBA like for you? Because it is obviously different. Was it what you were expecting? And how did you react to all those changes?
Yeah, I would say I'd watched enough WNBA to know kind of what I was getting myself into. I wasn't really sure what the structure would look like, what camps would look like, all that sort of little stuff. But the game itself, it's definitely a lot more physical than anything I've ever experienced. I would say a lot more one-on-one style of play. Yeah, that was a little bit, because it is professional, that was the difference I felt from college, is just because it's more like your individual talent can get you places. But then for a rookie or someone like me to get into the team, like, you need to be an expert at your role because you have so many incredibly talented individual players that if you wanted to make a team like that, you had to be exceptional at what you do best.
Is there a lot more, I guess, focus on isolation and one-on-one opportunities when you're at a WNBA training camp versus when you're at college? It's very focused on team concepts. Was there much similarities and differences in that kind of mindset going into it?
Yes and no. I feel like just it's more individually based in the WNBA just because the individuals are so incredible. Like, I think that that's why it's more of an individual, not necessarily individual game, but it's like your individuals shine because they are the best in the world.
And you're lucky that you had a couple of other Aussies at that Phoenix training camp when you got drafted. But also, we should say at the top, congratulations for getting drafted as well, because that's certainly a great notch in the belt of your career to have your name called out on draft day is incredible. There are a couple of us actually online when leading up to the WNBA draft, we were trying to pick, you know, what Aussies are going to get picked. And a few of us were like, don't count out Jazz Shelley. Like, he's got surely got to go in the round there somewhere. But you had Amy Atwell and Beck Allen with you at that Phoenix training camp. So hopefully that was a little bit comforting given that you made the big jump from college to WNBA.
Yeah, I mean, it was really cool to have both of them. And I hadn't met either of them before, but it's just because we're Aussies, it was just so easy to connect and feel at home. And honestly, a training camp, all the preseason games, every experience that I had there was nothing short of incredible. Like, all the girls were amazing. Beck was awesome. It was really cool to be able to connect with her. But it was just a really cool experience that I feel like I've learned so much from, and just grateful to have had that opportunity. I mean, everyone dreams of being able to go to a WNBA camp or being drafted. And I can say I've done that now. Obviously, I still got some work to do if I want to get back into the WNBA and have another chance at a training camp. But just having that under my belt, I think it's pretty special to say I've done that.
What was the run-up to the draft and the draft itself like as an experience? Because, you know, from here, we hear stories about what goes on, and you know, obviously you get to see the results of the draft. But you were there and you were like, you know, what was it like and what happens?
I think that was the scariest part, is I didn't really know how it would all work as well. And I have a pretty good agent that was pretty transparent and trying to talk me through everything that would happen. He gave me the option that night if I wanted to know about 15 minutes before where I was going, or did I want it to be a surprise on the telly with the rest of my teammates. And I went back and forth, and I was like, I just want to know, because it's this whole 2 weeks since college finished had stressed me out, and I just want to know what's happening. And then I decided, like, I'll let it be a surprise, because he was kind of reassuring me that my name would get called, because that was obviously something that was a bit stressful, is having all my friends and my family on Zoom and stuff at that night, not knowing if I was going to get picked up or not. So he was like, I have a strong feeling that your name will get called. So I said, okay, I'll let it be a surprise for all of us.
When your name was called, I mean, obviously you had like a level of comfort it was coming. When you heard it was Mercury, how did you react to that?
I was really excited that it was Phoenix, just knowing that Beck was there. I also knew Natasha Cloud. I had met her before. I had some sort of familiarity with the players and the coaches that were there. So that was really comforting to know I was going to a team where I did know some people already, and I knew how the coaches felt about me and that sort of thing. So I was really happy that it was them.
And when you got into that training camp, what were some of the first things the coaches' staff asked you to focus on, you know, just to kind of get you settled and comfortable with the big jump?
Because it is a professional sport, and there wasn't too much conversation. They were really happy that I was there and were really friendly and stuff. Some of the players that I had already known that were there, they were really good about just like, be who you are. You don't have to be anything more. Make sure you listen. That's the main part, is like, a lot of people don't get picked up because training camp is so quick and you learn so much that people can't keep up. So just make sure you're locked in, always, always focus, always know exactly what he's asking for and do the right thing.
And what was the schedule and routine in training camp? Is it, you know, 2 weeks intensive kind of every day on court stuff, or do they try and get a good mix of some off court stuff as well to start building team chemistry?
It was unique experience. Just, we went to San Diego for our training camp because we shared a facility with the Suns when they were in the finals. So for us to get enough practice in, we went to San Diego and had our camp there for about, I think it was like 5-6 day camp. And then we would just practice in the mornings, and practice would go for like 2-2.5 hours. And then in the afternoon, we would do some sort of team stuff, whether we go to dinner. We did a talent show one night, a rookie initiation talent show, and just team stuff. I think that was one of the biggest things, where Phoenix came from a losing record the season before, and the biggest thing for them was building team chemistry and culture. So that was a big part of training camp, was connecting with teammates outside of practice.
Yes, because there was a little bit of a few fractured relationships in the last couple of seasons for the Phoenix, which we'll just leave at that. And I'm really glad that you brought up the rookie talent show, because we only got snippets of that on social media. Are you comfortable sharing what your talent was that you presented to the team?
Yeah, so I actually wrote a poem. Me and Charisma Osborne, the other rookie, we actually won the talent show. She learned how to create swans out of towels and showed that to everybody. And I wrote a poem about my experience in the WNBA.
That's really sweet. So you're seriously multi-talented, state high jumper, professional basketball player and poet.
Look, just talking about the off-court talent, I'm really curious, what did you study at college?
Yeah, so I have my degree in advertising and public relations, a minor in psychology.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Very nice. That's a great combination.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
Yeah. Really smart combination to have as an athlete. And then it sounds like you're setting yourself up really well from, you know, 30 years from now when you probably decide to retire. And I say 30.
I don't know about 30. Might be 30.
Or when one day comes when you want to switch it up.
Yeah.
That sounds like a really handy degree to have that you can use as an athlete yourself to still stay involved in the game some way and perhaps work with other athletes.
Yeah, exactly. And with like the social media world growing and NIL and all these endorsements and stuff, I feel like the advertising social media marketing route is a good one to have under my belt.
Okay, you just talked about, you know, endorsement deals and so on. And I'm going to let this one pass over to Jacinta, because this is a topic that she loves to talk about, and I understand why, because it is really interesting.
Well, I would say I only like to ask and talk about it because I'm still trying to wrap my head around it and be an expert in it myself, to be fair.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you touched on NIL deals, Jazz, and based on what I've seen online, it sounds like that you are A, open to NIL deals, but also probably had some while you were at Nebraska. So based on your experience, give our audience a little quick description of what it actually is, and then give us a bit of a description about your experience with it.
Yeah, I would say I'm pretty educated in this area just because I've kind of been a guinea pig a little bit for the international students, because NIL is so different for international students in the US. You actually can't, for a period of time, you couldn't make NIL at all because you're on a student visa and not a working visa. So if you're on a student visa, you're not allowed to be employed, and NIL was seen as employment. So the only time every time I would come home, I could do NIL deals while I was residing in Australia. So I could do deals online, could promote things online and have to be paid while I was still in Australia. And then once I went back to the US, I was restricted of any sort of NIL deals. The rules have been lifted a little bit now, and international students are able to make passive income. Passive income kind of means that you can't necessarily do deals with people, but if people are using your name, selling your jersey, using your image without it being like negotiations, you can are allowed to make money from them because you haven't been involved in any of the negotiations or anything. So it's a whole new world that Nebraska have been really good with finding loopholes and teaching me how I can make money outside of basketball. But it's still a growing industry for international students, and hopefully they're trying to work it in where international student athletes can make what the Americans make.
Yeah, and that's a part of it that I didn't take into consideration, that there'd be a difference between international, you know, scholarship holders and local scholarship holders. I didn't even think that student athlete visa, would come into it. And does it get to a point where if you, I guess, have a certain profile in your team or at your college where you are an international scholarship holder and you're getting, you know, these great NIL offers that you're not too sure how to navigate, does it get to a point where you just have to pass it on to an agent or get an agent to help start managing it, I guess?
Some people get agents. I had a pretty good support system at Nebraska with, we had an NIL representative. So he was in charge of the NIL space at Nebraska. So he was really good with, I would get sent something and I could send it to him and say, can I do this? He normally says no. And then I say, okay. And then we figure something else out. Or we also have an immigration attorney that they hired to try and help us pretty much avoid getting deported. So it was really good to have those resources that I made sure I was really transparent with and asked before I kind of did anything.
It's a lot to think about on top of full-time uni, full-time sport, and then you've got all this adulting in the background of immigration lawyers and making sure you're not getting deported, which is no exaggeration because I imagine taking a deal on a student visa sounds very illegal, especially in the US.
Yeah, it definitely is. And that's why it was always very public, the things that I would do, just because Nebraska were very, they were like the first ones to figure out certain loopholes where I could make money when I was at home and not in the US. And then I would promote that. And then other people would ask, hey, how do you do that? And then we'd kind of share information within like the international, all the international student athletes. So if I ever did anything, it was kind of, why is she doing that? Is that a thing now? So very transparent.
You're paving the way for other international scholarship holders, really.
Yeah, I think that it was just something that people don't realize that we were missing out on. I mean, it wasn't, this is what college used to be. And so now it was kind of hard to see it changing and international student athletes not being able to do the same thing. But it's definitely come a long way. And I think it's only going to, the rules be lifted even more.
Yeah. So how do you think, say, in the next 1 to 3 years, how do you think the NIL landscape will change the overall landscape of women's college basketball? Because it's, even just with the transfer portal, I feel like that's become, I'm not too sure if it's because I've become more aware of it, but it seems like it's becoming more and more accessed, and some athletes, rightfully so, are looking to transfer to schools where they could perhaps get better NIL deals. So how do you see the landscape with NIL and college basketball changing?
Yeah, it's a hard one, and I think it's changed college basketball, college sports in general, just because you can be paid a large sum of money to go and play for that program. And it's going to see a difference in like the powerhouse schools who can afford to pay people, and then maybe the mid-major schools that can't. You might see a huge discrepancy from powerhouses compared to mid-majors. But also I can see the contracts going to more like professional contracts, because if you're going to pay someone that much money, you kind of need them to perform. Like, it's going to be really, really weird how it all plays out. I'm interested to see. But I think it's really cool that athletes are able to be paid for name, image, and likeness. But it just, there's so much gray area that makes it really difficult to manage.
Yeah, so it sounds like a potential to cause a, almost like a class divide between colleges.
Yeah, I could see it. That's just my opinion, obviously. You never know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Forecasting.
Yeah.
I'd say that there's probably going to be, I mean, obviously everybody's going to try and get to those top class colleges for the opportunities for the NIL deals and anything else that could be open to them. But there's only so many slots,
mm-hmm.
you know, and after that, it's, okay, I didn't get to one of those top class. So you'll still get, I think it'll actually lead to, you know, potentially a grading of colleges for the opportunity, but then also things might change. You know, a college may end up getting a player that everybody else doesn't rate, who ends up showing amazing performance, and then it doesn't really matter what college they're going to, they're still going to get an opportunity for an NIL deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very exciting nonetheless.
Oh yeah, it's going to change everything. But I'm curious to hear from you, Jazz, about, you know, the way the conferences are realigning themselves. You obviously would have had to travel a lot for college ball games. How do you think that's going to affect, you know, people, the way people are going to play? Because it's, you know, as you said, it's like full-time college, full-time sports. Potentially, if you've got a big NIL deal, there's a full-time job to add into that as well. Plus now travel's going to be all over the continental US. How do you think, you know, based off your experience, that's going to affect people?
Yeah, it's going to be very different. Just when I was in the Big Ten, you would have a couple of the teams, like you, for us, like Rutgers and Maryland were super far away. But now we have teams all the way in LA, which is even further. Imagine they're pretty much flying from like New York to LA at this point, which is kind of crazy. But very fortunate in college where a lot of the powerhouse schools charter and able to fly to each game and then come back. And I never really missed a day of school because we would leave and then come back after the game and get to Monday Monday class. So we were very lucky. And I think conferences like the Big Ten, every team will charter. And I think they'll be accommodating to make sure we're not missing too much school. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And they're going to have to be really accommodating to make sure someone's not going from one coast to the other, back-to-back sort of thing. So, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I guess it's going to make the game rostering a whole nother level of complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now you have some of the best teams playing against the best because the conference is so much bigger now. You're going to see your USCs and UCLAs play against, like, Ohio State and Iowa and stuff, and now it's just... It's good for the game, like the teams that are about to play against each other and how big the conferences are now, but it's just gonna be a lot of trouble.
Let's wind the clock back a bit. The Sapphires. You're in that gold medal winning team. For you, you know, back then, did you think, I mean, obviously it was a really talented team to be able to get the result, but did you think that that team, you know, was as exceptional as a group as it's turned out to be?
Yes and no, just because it was my very first Australian outing, sort of. So I mean, I knew our team was good, but compared to the rest of the world, I had no clue. And I didn't know how good we were. And then we started to win our first couple games. No, we played the USA in a practice game before the tournament started. And I'm pretty sure we either beat them or just lost to them. I was like, oh, no, we're actually pretty good. So, and then once we won that tournament, yeah, wow, that was one of the best teams that I've ever played on, ever been coached by Shannon Seabom. He's incredible. It was really cool to play on that team and see people be so successful past that under-17s. I think half went to college, half went to the WNBL. So it was definitely a special group.
For you, standing on that top step with a gold medal, how did that feel?
Yeah, that was... I would always say that's like one of the best moments in basketball that I've been a part of. Having a gold medal representing Australia is the ultimate dream, and I was very fortunate to be able to do that at 15. So now I'm kind of chasing that feeling again, and it's pretty cool when I went to college and was able to say that we beat you. Like, so the USA hadn't lost in like however many years, and it was pretty cool to say that Australia were able to do that.
Because you were bottom age in that team, correct?
I was bottom age, and then I was bottom age in U19s that next year.
Yeah, so being bottom age in any team, particularly an Australian junior team, is pretty outstanding. So do you have ideas of where they saw you early enough to invite you to selection camp? Was it just at like a playing bottom age at a nationals tournament? Or were you already at the AIS by then?
So my first under-17s, I wasn't in like the 20-man squad or whatever it was. And then I had a pretty good tournament at Nationals and they invited me to camp. And once I got to camp, I kind of felt like an underdog. Like I'm not expected to do anything. I wasn't even in this squad. And then came out and had a really good camp and was able to make the team, which was pretty cool for me to not be in that squad originally.
And then I remember however many months later after winning the gold medal at the World Cup, you and Shannon came to Country Cup in Albury for the gold miners and brought your medals to show everyone.
You did, yeah.
Which for us was really cool because at that tournament, me and a couple of friends had an under-18s New South Wales country team. I don't think we ended up playing against your team, though. We played perhaps against the other Vic country team. So we had the team that had Izzy Palmer and Kayla McSpadden in the team, awesome. In our team.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was just even wild for us as, like, you know, women to see you and Shannon come with a World Cup gold medal.
Yeah.
So was that kind of like a bit of a surreal experience after flying high to World Cup stage and coming back down to kind of where it all begins at Country Cup?
Yeah, I definitely don't even think it really hit me that we won a World Cup for a little while. It was pretty special to be able to bring it back to like an Aubrey Cup. And I think that's pretty cool just because I love Vic Country. I love being a Vic Country kid, and that I want to get back into Vic Country stuff right now just because it means so much to me, and they were the pathway that got me to where I wanted to go, and that was to represent Australia and go to college and do all the things. So it's pretty special to be able to give back to them and show people and inspire people, and yeah, love being a Vic Country kid.
Since being back home, have you had very many kids so far come and ask you much about your college experience and playing with the Basketball Australia pathway and perhaps asking for advice as to how they can follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, a little bit. I did a little thing with the COE and told them about my experience and how college works a little bit. So I've had a couple interactions there with obviously educating people about that college pathway. Not too much since I've been in Ballarat, but I'm pretty close with all the Maui girls. I go back and do camps there and stuff, and hopefully we'll see some of those girls at WNBL games. But nothing too crazy. My DMs are always open. Respond to anything to do with helping the youth. So,
well, you might have opened a can of worms there, saying your DMs are open.
I'm kind of curious. You know, you mentioned something about not really coming to grips with, you know, we won a World Cup. Do you think that sometimes, as a nation, we underrate ourselves in basketball? I think we're one of the best nations in the world in women's basketball. Do you think that maybe sometimes we kind of underrate ourselves a bit?
Yeah, I would say that definitely comes from the expectation we have on ourselves and our team. It's also because we care so much. I think that Australia pride themselves so much on our national team and representing our country, and we just want the best. And I think we hold ourselves in such high regard that when we don't achieve what we set out to achieve, we're disappointed. And even if we won a bronze medal, like, we you should be excited and happy. Like, we won a silver medal in under 19s, and I still think about that all the time. It's just because we should have won that game, you know. And I think that instead of being excited for ourselves winning a medal because it wasn't gold, it sucks just because we care so much.
And I think you were the first announced signing for Geelong United.
Yeah.
We're heading towards an upcoming WNBL season, brand new team. What's your expectations for this upcoming WNBL season?
It's interesting because we only have 3 signed players at the moment, and it is my first year back in the WNBL since I was about 18. So I don't really know what to expect, to be honest. I just think that I'm really excited that there is a team in Geelong for the WNBL. I have a really good fan base in Geelong. I'm hoping that we can continue to grow the game and grow the league. But also, there's no reason why we can't be successful our first year. Hopefully, we put together a team that is going to work hard and has high expectations, which I'm sure we will. But don't really know what to expect. Kind of just going to go into it and hope for the best. But yeah, I'm super excited to start that experience.
You know, it's, you said, there's a big community down in Geelong that supports basketball. One of the things that has impressed me is the level of communications coming out of Geelong United, not only for WNBL, but for everything else that they're doing. Have they talked to you about ways that they're going to try and engage with the fans and try and build that momentum behind the WNBL team?
Not exactly, but I know they are passionate about growing the game and growing sports in the Geelong area. Geelong is up and coming. They kind of told me it's more like a city, less a regional Victoria now, but they're really excited about this team being there, and the social media, all that sort of stuff has been unreal too. That surprised me a lot just with how active they are and sending me samples to post on my Instagram and all these captions and stuff. I love it. Like, it's just, they're really honed in on trying to grow this team and this league.
And being a country girl yourself, I'm sure you understand the importance of having a professional team in a regional area, particularly a women's professional sporting team. How much do you think this is going to mean to an area like Geelong?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. I'm really happy that we have two Vic country teams, Bendigo and Geelong. So I think it's really cool to see that pathway. I know growing up, I would watch Dandenong and Bendigo. They were the two WNBL teams. But just knowing that there is a reachable pathway for you to be able to connect with the players and run programs and do all the things to be able to show that it is doable, I think it's pretty cool to have that now in Geelong.
When you said that sending you stuff for social media, are they encouraging you to kind of keep pushing all the stuff about the team out there amongst your followers? Or is it more a case of, hey, listen, we're just putting this up and if you want to do something with it? And the reason I'm asking it is because I think Geelong seem to be really, you know, proactive in putting themselves out there. Some of the other teams, not so much. So I'm kind of curious, trying to understand what's driving it from their perspective.
Yeah, I think the new world is social media, and the only way we're going to get our name out there, the only way we're going to get attention and people getting excited about the season is to actively post online. And sounds like they're pretty dedicated to that, and that's the new world now, so that's the way we kind of have to push it.
And have you had much opportunity to talk with Chris Lucas about just what's coming?
Yeah, a little bit. Obviously, he's super busy right now trying to sign some players I can play with. So, but he's super excited to be in Geelong as well. And he's really happy that it was really sad for the Boomers to not be here anymore, which is really strange to think because that's the only team I ever watched growing up. So it's super interesting, but he said it's kind of given him new life and he's excited that we get to build this together and have a team in this sort of location.
Awesome. Well, Jazz, thanks so much for joining us. It's been great. We're obviously really looking forward to seeing how things pan out over the, first of all, the NBL 1 season for you and also the upcoming WNBL season. And best of luck with both of them.
Thank you. Thanks for chatting with me today.
It's been our pleasure and it's been really great having you on. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you get our latest pod. And we really appreciate if we could get a like and a review so we can extend the reach to more listeners. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.